Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Terrific job, Sarah. Great to have Sarah on with us. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's has served this valley for decades because they've been able, I don't care whether it's home, auto, commercial, any kind of business insurance, whatever, they've been able to find the right insurance so that you're covered for a price that fits your budget. And if there's a claim, they act as if it happened to them. That's the kind of partnership I want with my insurance agent, and that tells you about all the great pros at Purdy Insurance. Located on Market Street in Sunbury, but you can always go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks, by the way, to Tony Knopp, who sent out a very generous tweet the other day about being on the show. And Tony's on a lot of shows. And he said at Tony Knopp, "I'm not supposed to play favorites, but this is my favorite show to do." And that was great. That was really nice of him to do. We'll get to Matt Leon in a moment. But first, our play-by-play call of the day, the L.A. Clippers and Blake Griffin.
Inside to Griffin, all alone, and he sledgehammers it home with the right hand. 38 for Blake Griffin. 115-113, Clippers strike first here in overtime.
That's Brian Seaman on KLAC as Blake Griffin slams home a dunk in overtime. Big night for him. He had 43 points and 10 boards last night, and they beat the Charlotte Hornets 124-121. Clips are now 36-23 on the season. Let's bring in Matt Leon now from KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, my broadcast partner Dick Girardi wrote a rather interesting column that came out on Friday saying when it came to the Sixers, he said, "Look, I was just starting to like this team." And then they started dealing people, including Nerlens Noel. Do you share that sentiment?
Well, I'm in the minority. I've been on board with what they were doing in the big picture from the beginning, even going back to Sam Hinkie starting. But, yes, the amazing thing is when you look at this season, they had finally gotten to a point where they had earned back the average fan. The average fan, there was a genuine buzz about this team. With Joel Embiid and the idea of Ben Simmons coming back, and they've worked really, really hard to turn everyone against them with the way they've handled reporting these injuries and talking about it and being an all cloak and dagger and obfuscating here and there. I agree. They had a lot of people that were ready to go all in with them, and a lot of those people now turn their backs again.
Yeah, and that's an issue. And they trade Noel. Now, Noel's contract was up at the end of the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he was a restricted free agent, so they had the ability to match. And I don't understand this trade a little bit. I guess I do if you've decided that he's not part of your team and you're just looking to move him. You weren't willing to pay him whatever that money was going to be, and you decided to move him. But he has elite skills. He's an elite rim protector. And to give him up for basically 2 second-round picks and the kid Anderson that I don't think people know much about doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense for me, especially when you consider that Embiid's been out, and now Embiid's out indefinitely. And you had Noel that could play a lot of those minutes, and they just seemed determined to move him. But since the new regime with Brian Colangelo has come in, there have been tension with Noel when he got surgery earlier in this season. The Sixers put out a press release pointing out that it was elective surgery. I've never seen a team do that, where they actively go out of their way to say, this guy wants to have the surgery, it's not our idea. And there's been a dynamic there. But Noel had played really well as of late. The last few months, he had really, the fan base had embraced him. He was a big reason why they were turning things around. But I think the die was cast that Colangelo and the front office had decided long ago that Noel wasn't going to be worth whatever the money was going to be in, as a restricted free agent, and they were going to move him. And this is what you got. I think it's a terrible trade. I think it sets the organization back, it's not good for the future, especially now that, you know, they come out today and say Embiid is out indefinitely, which I think is translation for we've probably seen last of him this season, so makes even less sense to me.
Yeah, he and Simmons, it looks like they're both out for the year. But Jahlil Okafor is completely healthy. Does he actually have trade value, Okafor?
No, I don't think now. I think when you sit a guy like they did a couple weeks ago for 2 days, and you come out and say we're sitting him because we're actively close to moving him, and then you don't move him, I think that kind of tells you all you need to know about how this front office has been working here as of late. I think he can score. We saw that on Saturday against the Knicks. He had 28-10, but he is very limited in every aspect of the game that's not offensive. And granted, that is a big key, but his defense is subpar. He is an average at best rebounder. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bring much to the table except being able to score the basketball. And while that's a valuable tool, there are a lot of bigs in basketball that if you gave them the minutes, they'd score 18 to 20 points a night. And I think Jahlil Okafor falls into that category. I don't think there's much he does that's elite. And I think he really, really hurts you at the other end. And that's why I never understood if you're going to look at Embiid being a piece, regardless of this injury, you know, you had Noel and Okafor. Okafor is a much better player than Okafor is a better scorer than Noel, but right. Noel can score. You don't have to run a set for Noel offensively for him to have success at the offensive end on offensive rebounds. His ability to run the floor, he is 10 times the defender Jahlil Okafor is. And to give that talent, that skill base up for a song, it's just baffling to me. But I don't think there's going to be much interest in Jahlil Okafor going forward. Maybe on a draft night where you package him and a lower first to move up a little bit in a first round, maybe something like that. But on his own, no, I don't think. If no one was willing to pay now, I don't see why anyone would be willing to pay 6 months, 10 months from now.
In the national championship game, they drooled over his scoring. The bottom line is it was Emil Jefferson who came into the game and slowed down Frank Kaminsky. That's what won it for Duke that night. Nothing Okafor did in that game won the game for them. I mean, really, not much. Jefferson is the guy that slowed down Kaminsky. Okafor was a sieve.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I always, when I get on my rants here about this situation, it comes across like I'm anti-Okafor. I'm not. And to his credit, he has handled everything well. I mean, for a kid this young to be yo-yoed by an organization that can't decide what it wants to do, he has been a professional. He has said the wrong thing. He's been upfront with everything whenever he's been talking. It's really a plus, a positive for him and a credit to him, the way he's handled all this nonsense with being held out because he was going to be traded, and then, oops, not being traded, and then, oh, yeah, come join us in Boston. He has been a pro through and through, but I just think they've missed the boat on this one. I think they've just dug in, that they've decided one way is the right way, and I think they missed.
All right, what about Embiid? He hasn't really played when he's been out there. He's been great, but, I mean, the sense has to be shut down now, right?
Yeah, well, they came out today. He hadn't played since, I think it was January 27th. He had missed a few handful of games. Then he played that nationally televised game against Houston. Had a great game. I think he scored 32. But then there was soreness. And then they kept kind of stringing people along. Oh, he's day-to-day, he's day-to-day. Well, then we find out that he's had a partially torn meniscus and that he was told right away he was going to be out at least 3 weeks. So, you know, I don't know why the organization's out there saying, he could play, he could play, he could play. Now they come out today and they say he's out indefinitely. He's had soreness and some swelling in his knee. He's going to have an MRI. I mean, I think indefinitely is the rest of the season. That's not based on anything other than they've been so incredibly cautious. If he's having setbacks like this, I can't imagine a scenario where he would play again this season. But, the taste you got was great. I mean, he's an elite talent. I think you've obviously got to worry about injuries because, this isn't the foot. This is the knee. This is something else than what kept him out for 2 years. So we'll just have to wait and see.
And he plays all out. He dives into the stands after the ball. He dives to the floor to get a ball. When he could maybe take it a little easier, maybe be a little easier on his body if he wanted to.
Yeah, but I don't think that's how he's wired.
I agree.
And, covering this game, guys that are wired like that, you can't tell them to, hey, well, you can throttle back in those situations. It's just not, they'll kind of look at you. It's not how they approach the game. It's just unfortunate. You just hope that he kind of, it would really be a sin if we don't get a run. And I don't mean just as Sixers fans. I mean as people who love basketball. If we don't get a run of a few seasons of a healthy Joel Embiid to see what he's really capable of, because the sky is the limit with this kid.
Appreciate the time as always, Matt.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck. And maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Championship week is upon us. Of course, Bucknell's the number one seed in the Patriot League tournament. They will open up play. They get the 8-9 winner. And Nathan Davis will join us on the show tomorrow to talk about that and much more. So we're looking forward to having Nathan on the show to discuss the season and the fact that they are the one. But the bottom line for Bucknell is this: very simple. They can't get into the NCAA tournament unless they win the Patriot. Fair or not, that's just the way it is. It's, look, Power 5 rules a lot. I know there's this theory about, unless you've done research on it, which, of course, I've done research on it. That's the big difference. Cinderella does great in the ratings when Cinderella wins the first two rounds. Cinderella does not do well in the ratings any round after that. After that, people want to see chalk. It's just the way it is. Get to watch VCU play who? What? VCU, what? Not so interested in that game. The lowest rated Final Four game in the last 20 years was Butler against VCU. Nobody got into it or cared. Simple. Now, in the opening weekend, opening day, people love Cinderella. It's a riot. Second round, can they do it again? Great. When they get to the third round, that Thursday night or the Friday night, that's when you start to see the ratings tell you it's tank time. Okay, we've had enough of you. You're done. People want to see the bigger names. And that's just a fact. It's not anything else except it is fact. Now, the first two rounds, people love the upsets, love the Cinderella. It's great for ratings. All right, but that whole thing lasts the first weekend. It does not last beyond that. And that's, now that doesn't apply to Bucknell. Bucknell is in a one-bid league. The winner of the tournament gets in. And right now, if Bucknell were to get in on Joe Lenardi's board, they'd be a 14. It's a pretty good seed. Pretty good seed. They're a 14. They get a 3 seed as the opponent. And in this particular year, it's all wide, wide open. Bucknell has the veterans in the backcourt, not a foul on the inside. That would be a matchup nightmare for a lot of Power 5 teams. Now, what other schools, and a lot of people are on Wichita State's bandwagon, they should be. A lot of people are on Middle Tennessee State's bandwagon, they should be. Good team. Illinois State, hey, Illinois State's a good team. Illinois State's a very good team. Those are some of the mid-majors you're looking at. Yeah, obviously a Gonzaga or a St. Mary's. I don't see St. Mary's. In fact, I think St. Mary's is a prime lose opening day candidate, to be frank with you. Right now, they'd be a sixth seed, and I think they are a prime sixth seed that would get bounced. Their pace of play is too slow. They're only averaging 61 possessions a game, which is 351st and dead last in the country. When Gonzaga played at St. Mary's, that's what I talked about. Which pace would win the game? And it turned out that Gonzaga, with more pace, was able to win. St. Mary's will get in probably as a, you know, anywhere from a 6 to a 9, somewhere in there like that. But I think they're a prime team to get bounced out early because I just don't think their pace against somebody else is enough. And then for Bucknell, I mean, they know they're going to postseason play regardless. They're going to be playing at minimum in the NIT as a conference regular season champion, but they want to get to the NCAAs. I mean, they're 3 wins away from it right now. 3 wins. And all 3 would be on the home court. Dick and Milton joins us. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you got wind of the Bucknell Awards that they won today.
No, nobody took the time to inform me.
Well, real quickly, Nana Fallon was Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year, which is not doesn't happen very often. Nathan Davis was Coach of the Year. Fallon and Thomas were first team All-Patriot League. McKenzie was second team. Stephen Brown was on the All-Defensive team. And McKenzie was third team. Stephen Brown was second team.
Okay.
So they had four of their starters were on first, second, and third team. Two of them, Nana Fallon and Brown, were defensive team, and Nana Fallon was Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year. And Nathan Davis was, which is, that's a lot of awards for four starters, basically.
I mean, they've been the dominant team in the league. Their one Achilles heel was, of course, Lehigh twice.
Right.
And then they got caught up in that, Monday, Wednesday thing, which nobody won at. Anybody who played Monday and then played Wednesday was 0-10 in the conference this year. So it didn't work out for anybody.
I think the last person they said that was Player of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year was Muscala.
Okay, Mike. Okay.
Yeah, he won both. That's pretty good. That's good. And the nicest thing, or the best thing, probably about this team is there's all these kids are underclassmen.
Yeah, and I mean that's the part that's great about it. They're all growing up together. And what's interesting is that while being a team that will have almost everybody back next year, they're actually a little older now because they've all played their way to this point.
Right. Well, it was up in the air whether it would be Fallon for first string or for Player of the Year, or Kempton, obviously. It ended up being Fallon. I just thought I'd bring you up to date. Thanks.
That's great. Thank you, Dick. We'll have Nathan on tomorrow to talk about all that and much more. Question now is, can they put together a well-timed 3-game winning streak? And in the Patriot, that is what it's all about. Who can put together the well-timed 3-game winning streak to get to the 4-letter tournament? Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades because they've been able to find the right insurance at the right price for their customers. And believe me, they can handle a wide, wide variety of insurance needs. You need to have a great relationship with your insurance company and your insurance agent because it affects your budget, and in times of trouble, you need them to be the troubleshooter for you. That is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Don't forget the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament will be May 3rd. Susquehanna Valley Country Club to benefit the Susquehanna Valley YMCA. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for the Sports Bozo of the Day. And the Sports Bozo of the Day, as we all know, doesn't always have to be within the realm of sports. Awards are competition. You have one job. There's only 24 envelopes. You couldn't have handed them the right envelope? All right? You have one job. For Janet Patterson, you couldn't have put up Janet Patterson's actual picture? Instead of putting up a picture of some other actress? All right? Bill Paxton passed away earlier in the day. Couldn't find 5 minutes to put him into the tribute last night. That show was a mess. And what's really bad about it is they were celebrating what they do. Well, guess what? They're not very good at it. At least last night they weren't. Wow. I mean, think about that. Those are three gigantic gaffes. Supposedly a light fell last night too, right? It was a light that fell. They had the wrong picture up for Janet Patterson passing away. That's not her. They didn't include Bill Paxton, who passed away earlier in the day. It takes literally minutes to put a picture and the year up there at the end. Because guess what? The song did not end until far after that. And then you follow up the best picture thing in a massive screw up. But entertainment's what they do. They were trying to tell you last night they're the best at it. And then put that show together. Brilliant. The Steelers, by the way, are going to franchise tag Le'Veon Bell. Which, of course, makes complete sense. The Arizona Cardinals are going to franchise tag the defensive end Chandler Jones. But Le'Veon Bell gets the franchise tag. Now, the two sides have until July 15th. At 4 in the afternoon to reach an agreement on a long-term deal. If there's no deal, Bell would have to play the 2017 season under the franchise tender. But they do have between now and July 15th to put together a long-term deal. This is a guy that had 32 touches a game in the final 8 games this season. It's not bad. I mean, 32 touches a game. So they franchise tag Le'Veon Bell, but that also doesn't mean they can't come to a long-term agreement with him because they can, and they have until July 15th to do so. And Chandler Jones was franchised today by the Arizona Cardinals. I mentioned the scheduling earlier where just a flat-out foul ball is how they did it this year. There's something else that nationally they're discussing in football. And that is making a revision to the targeting rule to give maybe a little more leeway on penalties in the targeting rule. What I can't stand about the targeting rule is the lack of common sense in the booth. On the field, I have no issue with it. Never have had any issue with it on the field. It's bang, bang. Official thinks he sees something or she sees something. And they throw a flag. Okay. With the idea that they'll get it right in the booth, but I thought I saw something. And the booth will confirm or deny because it's so close. How many times when it's come to targeting, when they go to the booth, that you disagree with the call? I know I do, over and over and over and over again. There was that Foster Farms Bowl a year ago. Nebraska kid had been thrown out of a game earlier in the year for targeting, which I did not see. I didn't, so I can't judge whether it was right or wrong. But I'm watching this game. This kid goes up and makes a high tackle up by the shoulder pads. His helmet never touches the UCLA player's helmet. So I watched that once, twice. My friend, he's fine. They threw him out. They threw him out? I'm thinking, who's watching this thing? Now we all know the Brandon Smith play against Michigan. What are you watching? Again, the on-the-field official, no issue. Zero. The guy that threw the flag is in the back of the end zone. So I want to say it was Grant Perry. His back is at the goal line. His back is to the official. Brandon comes in at an angle, and I guess the shoulder pad must have touched the helmet area, or I think he jolted the shoulder and made Perry's head move to the right. So the official in the back sees the head move to the right, so he throws a flag. That's fine. I'm okay with that. And the reason I'm okay with it is the people in the booth can pick the flag up. I have no problem with that. They're allowed to pick the flag up. And then you watch the replay. And I'm talking, it takes one replay. You sit there and go, all right, he's fine. And then they kept going over it. I mean, I remember Jack and I sitting in the booth, and the two of us are looking at it like, what's this taking so long for? And it turned out they threw him out. Who was looking at that replay? The same people at the Foster Farms Bowl with the Nebraska UCLA kid? There's no common sense with it. The problem is not the field officials. They're doing their job. They think they see something, so they throw a flag with the idea they're going to be backed up upstairs that they'll get it right. The official on the field is not hoping that they throw the person out, but they thought they saw something with the idea it's going to open the door for the people upstairs with a replay to confirm or deny. Because the game is so fast, I completely understand that. The problem is you don't have enough common sense, or maybe it's leeway, in the replay booth. And that's a big problem. That is a big problem. And that's where, you know, I know they're going to take a look at it. They need to. Targeting does need to be a part of the rules. I don't want players launching themselves into somebody else and using the helmet as the lead of a projectile. I don't want that. It's bad for the person who gets the contact, but it's also bad for the person delivering the contact if they're using their helmet. So it's bad all the way around. The problem you have with defensive players right now is that they're guessing on tackling. And we all know that when you guess, you have a problem. At anything, guessing it as a player is, you know, leads to all sorts of problems. You become tentative, and if you're not sure, tentative leads to mistakes. Tentative also leads to injuries. That's an unintended consequence of this. So I'm glad they're taking a look at it. They should take a look at it. The problem is in the booth that is not on the field. And they need to have a long, long powwow with booth officials so they get it right for everyone concerned. In neither play did Brandon Smith or the young man from Nebraska launch themselves at the person on the play. In fact, Brandon Smith's making a play on the ball. I mean, when you send a message that going for the ball is bad, you're really hurting defense. So they're going to review it. I'm glad they're going to review it. They absolutely need to review it because it's a part of the game right now that I can't answer. If somebody were to call up, what's targeting? I could not answer that question for you. We'll come back, wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. A brand new Hyundai Elantra from Sunbury Motors Hyundai can be yours for only $242 per month. This is not a lease payment. $242 per month on a brand new Hyundai Elantra with America's best warranty. A 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors says a 2017 Hyundai Elantra is the absolute best buy for your buck in 2017. Sunbury Motors was voted best car dealership. best quick service, and best body shop. Now add best new compact vehicle with a Hyundai Elantra, and you just made the best decision of 2017. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is making 2017 the year of the Elantra. There's 34 to choose from, starting at $242 per month, tax and tags extra, at 2.99% APR for 72 months to qualified buyers. Sunbury Motors Hyundai declares 2017 the year of the Elantra.
I'll get a chance to read Peter King's Monday Morning Quarterback on MMQB. He does an interview with Mike Mayock. I think when it comes to the draft, Mike Mayock is the guy that when he speaks, I listen. Always has been that way. Peter was able to get a hold of him and talk to him about everything from quarterback to, I'll take a direct quote here. From Mike Mayock from Peter's article on MMQB on SI.com. This is as good and as deep a class as I've seen in a draft in several years, with the exception of quarterback and offensive line. Running backs and tight ends, top end and depth are outstanding. Tight ends, I haven't seen a group like this in years. Wide receivers, very good. Defensively, it's unbelievable. The edge rushers. We haven't seen a group like this in a long, long time. You'll be able to get a starting edge rusher in the fourth round that last year, or most drafts, you compare it to an edge rusher in the second round. Corners and safeties, it's the best I've seen in 10 years at least. That was the quote by Mike Mayock in Peter King's MMQB column today on SI.com. Combine's coming up this weekend. I think there's a group in Seattle. I think I've got to get back to them. They want to do an interview with me about Chris Godwin. But I said, sure, I'll do that. What the heck? I'll tell you the other part, too, is that you look at the running backs in this draft. Really helped by Zeke Elliott. We've been seeing backs get drafted in the upper half of a first round and not pan out. And Trent Richardson obviously being the prime one. Elliott ends up, what was Elliott, the fourth overall pick last year? Some right around that neighborhood. And put together a season worthy of being the fourth overall pick in the draft. What he did helped Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey. Now you'll have some, because look, it's a copycat league. And being a copycat league, you'll see more people take a flyer on a running back because of what Elliott did. Jack Hamm and I were talking about the draft this morning. Jack called me about something else that we were talking about. Then we kind of swung our way to the draft. And we were talking about down the road, whatever, you know, Saquon Barkley, whatever he decides to do. But he's got a game that just fits the NFL beautifully. He's probably, you know, he's a great runner. He's probably a better receiver than Elliott. And he's just as good a blocker. I mean, those are the three cornerstones you're looking for. And he's turned in another great 40 time here in the offseason. And so if you get a chance to read this article on MMQB, strongly, strongly recommend it. If you're really into the draft, or even if you have a casual draft feeling, read it. It'll give you a lot of fascinating information. Peter asked some really good questions. And Mike Mayock gave some fascinating answers. As I said, when it comes to the draft, he's the guy I've always listened to. He watches so much tape. So much tape. And And because he watches so much tape, it just makes a difference. He takes the time to really evaluate, and he knows what he's looking for. And you do have to know what you're looking for. I mean, let's take Godwin, for example. Godwin's top-end 40 speed is not going to knock everybody over. It's not going to happen. But this is where he is going to win people over. Precision of routes, concentration, blocking. So many times on a long run by Barkley, did you see the block Godwin threw downfield? Godwin has no issue mixing it up. His concentration, there are three receivers that to me, I checked that, four receivers to me, in the time I've been around here, that I thought had upper-end concentration. Two made it in the NFL, the other one didn't. And the ones that had, to me, the best concentration were David Daniels, Bobby Engram, Allen Robinson, and now Chris Godwin. Now, Daniels didn't make it. Obviously, Engram had a, 14-year career? Robinson's had a Pro Bowl career so far. His concentration is probably even a little bit better than Robinson's. And that's where, I don't know, that's where on tape he will wow people. When they see in traffic, he doesn't care. That's really important. He's the kind of guy that will be a chain mover. I mean, is Julian Edelman a streak? Is Danny Amendola a streak? No, but Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan, the Patriots trio, are all great concentration possession receivers. All right, Nathan Davis tomorrow. Bucknell, a well-timed three-game winning streak away from the NCAA tournament. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 3 to 5, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.